All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages. That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at Afani.com/crypto101. That's Afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number. So make sure it's protected with Afani.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode here of the Crypto 101 podcast. Super pumped for today's episode. Brendan is joining me. You guys know me. I'm Bryce. Brendan, man, this is going to be a great episode. We're going to be diving into pretty much the fundamentals of what's underpinning a lot of these crypto altcoins, as well as just the overall narratives that are kind of driving prices. With the head of research at Blockworks, Ryan Connor. We're going to bring him on in just a second. But Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm stoked for this too. The crypto market's strong, and we get to see a little bit into the background of what's happening behind the scenes here. So how can you not be, at least I was going to say a little bit excited. How can you not be extremely excited? So ladies and gentlemen, buckle up.
Yeah, no, this is going to be great because I one of the questions we get asked the most is like, you know, crypto prices move day to day, but like what really drives those prices? And we could talk about, you know, speculation, but I really want to hone in on the fundamentals of DeFi, of crypto. So what better guest to have us on the show with us is Ryan Connor, like I said, the head of research at Blockworks. Ryan, how are you doing, my man?
I'm great, guys. It's a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So before we dive into all the incredible research you guys are doing, tell us a little bit about your background. Like, who are you and how'd you kind of come into the crypto world?
Yeah, totally. So have a pretty vanilla background, got into finance immediately after university, was there for 7 years managing macro portfolios, so operating cross asset class and, you know, just doing TradFi, just pure TradFi. And then, 2019, started thinking about crypto, but not really taking it too seriously, dabbling. And by 21, 22, grew like obsessed with the space, you know, started out as really like a macro play. But then I remember learning about Compound and thinking to myself, like, wow, these things actually do things. And that was like so powerful to me. And it was powerful because, my peers did not know that and almost refused to know it and still kind of refuse to know it today. I think a lot of TradFi is doesn't really know what's going on in crypto. So there's a lot of alpha there. So decided to make the jump to full-time crypto in 23. And, Blockworks was really the natural fit. I, you know, had the privilege of learning from a lot of really smart people over my career. And one thing that they were was just objective. They didn't really care how they made their money. They could bet on Google today and bet against it tomorrow, and it was never considered strange. And somehow that's very strange in crypto. but if you poked around a little, you could find Blockworks and you could see that they were thinking about the space in similar ways. Right. Like, yes, ETH could be doing great today, but it could have some problems tomorrow, and that should be, and you shouldn't be afraid to say things like that. So I was naturally attracted to Blockworks. And I sit on the research team today, chatting with institutional clients about crypto.
I love it. Yeah, no, honestly, you know, Blockworks is one of my favorite podcast networks, of course, outside of Crypto 101. But yeah, you guys are the place that I go to listen to some incredible guests. So you guys have a slew of hosts that are all incredible, as well as your research team and, you know, whoever's running the social media. You guys just got great coverage, great events in person. I know Permissionless is coming up as well. So you guys should check that out. You know, we'll put that in the show notes as well, just so everybody could kind of check that out. Cause yeah, you guys put on great events, but I want to kind of just start the conversation a little high level because people come here, it's Crypto 101. It could be the very first podcast they're listening to that has anything to do with crypto. So let's talk about what the high level investment case is for Bitcoin just today. Like, you know, you kind of start your portfolio, you know, there's a million coins. Let's start with, you know, the investment case for Bitcoin, and then we could start to talk about the investment case for some of these smaller altcoins that might have more growth potential but more risk and all that kind of stuff. And of course, nothing that you hear us say or any of our guests will be construed as financial advice.
If you have been considering futures trading, now might be the time to take a closer look. The futures market has seen increased activity recently, and Plus 500 Futures offers a straightforward entry point. The platform provides access to major instruments, including the S&P 500, NASDAQ, Bitcoin, natural gas, and other key markets across equity indices like energy, metals, forex, and crypto. Their interface is designed for accessibility. You can monitor and execute trades from your phone with a $100 minimum deposit. Once your account is open, potential trades can be executed in two clicks. For those who prefer to practice first, Plus 500 offers an unlimited demo account with full charting and analytical tools. No risk involved while you familiarize yourself with the platform. The company has been operating in the trading space for over 20 years. Download the Plus 500 app today. Trading in futures involves a risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify. Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? And credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With Gemini Credit Card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight into your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, or you're a faithful listener of the Crypto 101 podcast and love Bitcoin and other cryptos, visit the Gemini credit card website so it's easy for you to earn even more Bitcoin or crypto with their credit card. Again, visit Gemini.com/card today to learn more.
Just educational.
Totally, yeah. So I might be the wrong person to ask, depending on what your opinion is on like the investment case for Bitcoin. I think Blockworks Research has a pretty differentiated view. First one, like, we don't exist to really talk about Bitcoin. It's pretty much the benchmark asset for the asset class. And if you're coming to us, you're probably looking to generate some alpha. So you want to operate outside of Bitcoin. But, you know, I think that the median kind of, or the average crypto investment manager will tell you that there's a digital gold thesis, or there's a censorship resistant store of value, non-sovereign store of value thesis, where you can own this asset and no government can stop you from owning it or transacting it. And I do think that there's some truth to it. But for me, the reason why Bitcoin is performing today is structural. It's because there's essentially only one asset that is open to TradFi in any amount of size to get exposure to the crypto story, and that is Bitcoin. So you've opened up the floodgates to only one asset, and the capital can only go one place. And TradFi often wants benchmark exposure. You know, think of just the rise of ETFs and just like, and playing with betas. Bitcoin has become that asset for a lot of traditional money managers. So for me, like, you know, why does someone want to, like, why would Bitcoin be a part of your portfolio today? I think it's to get beta exposure to a growing asset class in the same way that you would own the Qs to get exposure to technology.
So when you say that Bitcoin is the benchmark, you know, let's say that Bitcoin is up, you know, 15% or 20% in a year, you're looking to outperform that, right? And that's where you go to generate alpha. Like, how do you generate the alpha? How do you look to outperform Bitcoin?
Yeah, totally. So our our subs are looking to generate alpha, the investment managers that buy our research. And they do that by going out on the risk spectrum and timing and buying things with strong fundamentals that they think will outperform Bitcoin. Our subs are mostly venture capital funds and long mostly fund managers in crypto. And then we do have a bunch of TradFi subs as well. But yeah, they want to go out on the risk spectrum. And that often necessitates finding real businesses generating sustainable economics operating in the crypto economy, whether it's perpetual futures exchange trading, whether it's borrow lend, whether it's DEX activity, whether it's consumer applications or DPIN. Our subs are looking for things with fundamental floors, things that have longevity, similar to what you would, similar to what a small cap equity manager would do, right? It's a very similar game. So they would be going out on the risk spectrum and looking for, good teams with real economics delivering, real products to consumers.
No, I love that. And it's something that, we spend a lot of time here at Crypto 101 trying to grok as well, is kind of where the real value is in the space. And, there's two kind of sides of the coin. There's like the meme coin stuff where it's like openly sort of in a campy style, like self-acknowledging, like there's no value behind whatever we're doing. It's just a community. It's just vibes. It's going to go up big. It's going to go down big. And then just kind of like owning that. And then there's the other side, which is almost like what you're talking about, where there's real businesses, real economic value, passing back, some kind of, accretive sort of value to the holder's bottom line because of either buybacks or you could stake the tokens or blank. And I guess my question is to you, what is that sort of, value creating mechanisms that you're seeing, that you're kind of most bullish on?
Yeah, so I think two sectors that we're most bullish on right now is, one's kind of a cop-out answer, but I do think it's real. And I think if you're early stage, you want to be thinking this way is consumer. I think that, over the past few years, consumer has proven that it's here and it's sticky and it generates a ton of money. It could be really successful. And if you could find the right founders playing in the right markets, there are some really big outcomes there. The Pump Fund ICO is imminent, and that is, proof that consumer crypto is an extraordinary opportunity. So we're really excited about experimentation there, particularly with respect to net new asset issuance. So consumer applications that issue new assets that are interesting to consumers. And we can dive a little deeper into that a little later. The second sector that we're most interested in is DPIN. DPIN's really interesting. It often inverts cost structures of very capitally intensive businesses, which is really attractive, both from an economics perspective. If you look at, Helium versus its telecommunication comps, it's stripping out 99% of the costs of running a telecommunications network. Mm-hmm. But the other interesting thing is that, I can envision a world where traditional money managers see something like that, and it's very easy for them to put in their portfolio, right? Like Bitcoin, it's like, what is this? Is this illegal? Like censorship resistant money? Like some investors will have a hard time selling that to their LPs and their compliance officers. Right. DPIN, much easier sell because it looks a lot like TradFi, but it does this very interesting thing of inverting cost structure. So two sectors we're really excited about.
Nice. No, I love it. Very, very excited about DPIN and consumer crypto. I mean, that's a good one. And I know you said it felt like the low hanging fruit, but most people don't come on the show and talk about that. So I want to kind of unpack a couple of these concepts there. I think you said net new asset issuance is a kind of a metric that you look at, and then reference the Pump Fund ICO, which I think should probably be pretty big. I saw like a chart of how many users. Or I guess it was monthly active visitors. And it was like at the very top, it was like the 10 top like crypto related ones. And it wasn't actually even crypto related. It was like, I remember DraftKings was up there. Betfair was up there. Polymarket, Robinhood was at the top, and Coinbase, both like 30 to 35 million like monthly active visitors. And then Pump Fund was in there. And number seven or eight with like 5 or 6 million sort of monthly users. So people like hate on it and think it's going to be like, you know, this big, you know, extractive thing. But at the end of the day, maybe that's where the eyeballs are. That's where the usage is. So, yeah, the consumer stuff is interesting. I want to have you kind of like riff on it a little bit. And then also maybe in context, I don't know if you've done any research on this, but the LaunchCoin Believe app thing, because that's where I see new assets being issued. It's like on Pump Fun and on LaunchCoin.
Yep, totally. So, yeah, we kind of theorized about this concept about a month or so ago. It's something that I personally have been thinking about for a few years now, that is just net new asset issuance. Mm-hmm. So like, what is that? I think, just think about it empirically. What has been successful in crypto? It has not been trading stocks on the blockchain. It has not been trading bonds on the blockchain. It is from trading new, weird, interesting assets that are very different from what we're used to. So think of Bitcoin. It's a 150 vol asset with like a Sharpe of like, I don't know, historically like 7. Like, it's ridiculous. It's just this like new thing. And it's interesting for portfolios for that reason. It adds diversification benefits. Probably the second most popular net new asset product is perpetual futures. To be able to take on leverage without having to manage expiries has been extraordinarily attractive, particularly for retail traders who want to get leverage quickly, but they don't want to have to think about the complexities of managing some laddered futures strategy, right? And think about expiration dates. Most of the most successful products in crypto rely on issuing fundamentally new assets, and Pump is the most obvious one. Meme coins are a net new asset. These are assets that are only possible because crypto exists. They allow people to issue arbitrary assets with unique characteristics that either are, you know, in a legal gray area on TradFi rails, or just like too costly to issue on TradFi rails. So, you know, Pump Fund issued 10 million tokens over the last 12 months. There's no enterprise in human history in TradFi that's ever done that type of volume in terms of asset issuance, right? So new assets are extraordinarily popular. One of those new assets have been meme coins, is this Pump Fund style game where you keep on churning out these arbitrary units. You throw like funny names on them and you use technical analysis and crypto native kind of like fundamental reasoning to trade. And most of them go to zero, but people still trade them over those time frames because they want to gamble, right? And it's okay. And it's been extraordinarily successful. The app has generated over $700 million in revenue since it was first launched. And
which was only like a year ago, right? Or a year and a half. Correct. Or something.
Yeah, I believe it was last March. It might have been a little bit earlier, but yeah, last March is when you really start to see the revenue kind of on the chart. And, you know, the interesting thing about Pump is that it didn't do anything new. It just did what we've been doing in crypto for a long time, which is issuing arbitrary assets, trading them, and like giving them funny names and trying to do the next 1,000x. And all it did was compress the friction with which we were able to do that. And it created this interesting internet native, you know, like game of chicken and Keynesian beauty contest to like trade these assets. And it's been extraordinarily successful in the same way like that DraftKings is successful, right? Like, you go to a party, you know, you might not be into sports, but you have DraftKings. So you get a little bit of action on the game. And like, meme coins are the same thing. Like, oh, I have 15 minutes between two calls. Like, let me get a little action in the meme coin market. Because like, you know, 15 minutes isn't enough to do more than trade some meme coins, right? So, yeah, it's been really successful. And the market's very short, this idea. I think increasingly less so, probably because of the work that Blockworks Research has done in just like shining light on how much money is being made here and how sticky this product is. It's objectively one of the most successful in crypto history. But there is a problem with Pump. It's that it lacks a curation layer. So there's a lot of traders out there who don't want to trade completely valueless things. And I think that that's where Believe comes in. Believe is a platform for issuing arbitrary assets, but it has a curation layer that will vet the teams that are issuing these assets to be sure that there's some product either like loosely associated or it could be associated with the thing in the future, to make sure that there's good actors and you can trade the assets of an indie dev team, which could potentially look like some equity one day, depending on how the product evolves or how the regulatory environment evolves. So, you know, we think Pump has been extraordinary success. We're really excited to see the demand for the IPO. And we think that Believe is kind of like a natural successor to this model, where fundamentally oriented investors who want to trade a similar style of coin but need some fundamental floor on the thing will participate on Believe.
Yeah, and one of the things you just mentioned that I thought was definitely worth, you know, kind of circling back on, you mentioned like investing in indie devs, it kind of just reminds me of like the ICO bubble back in, you know, 2017. It's like you buy this token, and the token has like some semblance of you know, accreting value by the efforts of these developers or whatever. So is Launchcoin and the Believe app going to like kind of pull in ICO mania 2.0, do you think? Or is it kind of just like a lot different?
I think it's a lot different. I don't know if it's going to cause a mania. I think that anytime you get a new like game of, you know, money raising and crypto, that you will see that tendency. Perhaps that already happened. It had a really big first month, and its activity has kind of gone sideways since, but perhaps it will. I think that the market's different now. I think one, just like people have wised up, retail has been participating in crypto now for a longer period of time, and retail is getting smarter, frankly. You see this in the valuations. You see this in the reaction to the low float, high FTV coins that launch. You see this in, you know, public calls for more transparency around token launches that come from, you know, the Twitter crowd. So the retail investors in crypto are wising up. So I think that, you know, what was the ICO boom characterized by? It was characterized by insane price action and valuations and like big numbers on the cap table. And I don't think that you'll get that style again, maybe directionally. But, you know, I think the more interesting thing with Believe is that the kind of curation layer where they are reaching out to indie dev teams and getting them to raise money, just like it could change. And again, you have to be optimistic here, right? I don't think it's like useful to like say, oh, it's a startup, it's a hard idea, so therefore it's going to fail. Like, I think we should try to reason about the ways that it'll work. And I think one of the ways that it can work is just like, it's really easy to code up an app. And like indie devs historically, they don't have huge outcomes. So venture capital doesn't pay attention to them. But as a consequence, they don't market and they don't target demographics over the age of 20 because they don't share apps and therefore the app can't go viral. So if these teams are able to raise even small amounts of capital, you add a tool to the indie dev tool chest and you potentially open up the space to target new demographics for these apps, which could lead to different outcomes. You've seen really big, you know, everyone has something on their phone. Like everyone who skis or snowboards use slopes. And like that was like a solo dev who didn't raise any money, who went to market and made that thing go viral. And to give ordinary retail investors the ability to participate in that kind of upside, especially if that app is sold to like a legitimate, you know, Web2 incumbent, that could be really interesting. It's a net new asset that wasn't possible without crypto, and it's exciting.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Say big to Menards and keep cool in the summer heat with a new window air conditioner from Denali Air. Quickly and efficiently cool your spaces with auto and eco modes to maximize performance and save on energy costs. Featuring 3 fan cooling speeds and a remote control, allowing you to cool your space from anywhere in the room. Save big money on Denali Air. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Yeah, I really liked what you said about the longevity of these Pump.Fun coins. Because sure, you know, every now and then we get one of these that has some credibility. They actually do have a good team. And they blow up and they last for a while, right? They do something meaningful and they stick around. But for every one of those that happen, you got to think, you know, thousands don't. And I think people started to get a little bit frustrated with that. You know, the longer that I felt like Pump.Fun went on, the more rug pulls we were seeing, the more crypto projects just kind of went to zero and they really weren't going anywhere. And so, sure, you know, it is fun to kind of come in here, gamble a little bit of money, just like playing casino in real life, like, right? I mean, it has a time and a place. People enjoy it. But I think that they want a bit more substance. So they want something like this, something new. And that's really where I feel like Believe comes in here. And that you're right, you know, people can have a more vetted process. They can still get in early. They can still play some of this early game volatility, but there are some caveats and there's definitely some big differences here. So I guess, is it fair to say that Believe is like the crypto native Kickstarter, but with embedded token incentives and secondary market liquidity that happens from day one?
Yeah, the big thing is the price chart. I think that the price chart is a retail feature that is experienced extraordinary PMF, and you're seeing it everywhere, right? Like TradingView is like a breakout consumer app. If like I'm on the plane and I'm just like looking ahead of me, like I see people like checking their stock apps all the time, and I'm like, I don't know, like I just like I see the guy, like I know he's not a professional trader. He's like scrolling through Palantir, like and Tesla, like I know where he's got his money. You see it in ESPN with win probabilities. Now you can track the minute-by-minute win probability in an NBA game, and that's really exciting. And people will use that as a time when they should probably bet a little, right? If the win probability is super low, let's bet on a turnaround in this game.
I see.
I retweeted something the other day where it was like there's a bar in Asia. I forget which country it was in, but
I saw this.
Yeah, the beer prices adjust by supply and demand, and it adds an element of gamification to a process by adding a price chart, because all of a sudden you can draw lines on it. You can theorize about where it's going to go. And it's like, and it's funny when like PvP trade did this fantastically. Like you spin up a Telegram group, you all trade perps. And if you get liquidated and lose a bunch of money, it like shows where you sold and it's very shareable. And then you can like make fun of your friends forever because they made a bad trade. Like it's fantastic. So it's the price chart, I think. It's the liquidity in the price chart that makes Believe fundamentally different than a Kickstarter. And you know, Kickstarter without a price chart, it's like, what am I doing? Like, think of the.
I got this shirt, you know.
Right. Yay. No. Think of the payback period on DraftKings. It is sub 1 day, right? Yeah. It's probably a few hours. And the payback period.
Instant gratification.
Correct. It's the instant gratification that retail needs to be engaged, especially today. We know how these apps work. We know what retail wants, and they want quick feedback. So, you know, also like Robinhood, you know, ultra short options, right? Like those within the trading day, that's what retail wants. Yeah. So, you know, retail likes a lot of volatility and the price chart gives them that. So I think that that's why Pump is successful, because you know whether or not you're making money very quickly. Like, do I want to buy Apple stock and like maybe make 15% this year? It sounds terrible, right? Like I want to either lose it all or make a few bucks in a very short time frame, and that's what Pump allows for, and that's what Believe allows for, which is it's what we want.
Yeah, no, I love that that idea of like just the price chart, this shared social icon or whatever that everybody like kind of worships in a sense. Just you know, the price chart just as a construct is very interesting, because it's kind of the social consensus of like what anything is worth, right? And you know, it's just, yeah, it's pretty trippy. We could trip out on that for a while.
I mean, just like think about your friend group and think about how many of them knew what a price chart was before COVID and how many of them knew what a price chart after was. Like everyone in my friend group now knows TA. Every one of them. And like they know it better than some like fundamental investors themselves, right? And because it's like very easy to understand. It's something we can all get behind. It makes it a fun game. And you know, you have a huge installed base, and especially in the United States, that a lot of their apps have charts on them. They all know how they play the game. So, you know, adding like, I think I tweeted the other day, like if you're building a retail consumer app, like add a chart ASAP. I don't care what your app chart is. Just add the chart.
Ryan, while we have you, I want to make sure that we cover some of the fundamentally strong DeFi concepts that are out there, because I know, you know, you've done, you know, quite a bit of research as well on you know, real economic value and revenues and all that kind of stuff. And so could you kind of give us just the high level, I guess if we call it like DeFi, I mean, I don't know if this is crude, but like 1.0, like the Maker, the Aave, the Uniswap, like this kind of world of value accrual. What's your kind of take there? Are they doing it right or wrong? And then like, is there kind of like a new era of like where the puck is going with DeFi that we should be paying attention to?
Yeah. And I would even broaden the scope. I wouldn't even say it's just DeFi. I think it's just crypto generally. You know, crypto has a weird path dependency where it started out with Bitcoin and wanted to be gold or payments or something, but it was always trying to like be money. And therefore, like, I don't know, money doesn't have financials. Right. So you can't think about how much money makes. So people ignored, you know, basic financials around these tokens. Things changed in 2020, 2021, where TVL started happening. And then, you know, you mentioned Maker and Aave and Uniswap. They were solely valued on TVL because it was the only data that the market had. But now revenues are routine. Right. Like go to, you know, any data provider, you'll get time series of the project's revenue on a daily basis since inception. These assets, they generate real cash flow, and it's time for crypto market participants to start thinking about those real cash flows with respect to the valuation of the protocol. And you're seeing that in markets, I would argue. So like, what are the two big sources of revenue? You know, one is, well, like at the L1, we coined a metric called REV, which is just the demand for block space. So how much a user has to pay to get into the block. And that includes base fees, priority fees, and then tips to structure MEV transactions within a block. And you're seeing these L1 blockchains generate billions of dollars per year in REV. And, you know, they have the potential to be really phenomenal businesses with really strong network effects to generate really strong revenue. So we think that, you know, we think it's pretty obvious that these things are going to be valued with respect to the rev that they generate. And we think it's like super obvious that that'll be the thing that makes TradFi attracted to it. You know, I was at a conference, it was more TradFi oriented, and they showed this rev metric that Blockworks popularized on the screen. I didn't know that they were going to do this, but they showed it. And they said,
like, I invented that. Yeah, that's my chart.
I pulled out my phone. I got ready to take a photo. And then like, as I'm pulling out my phone, I hear gasps from the crowd because the person on stage mentioned that Solana was generating $3 to $4 billion a year in REV, which is like cash flows or revenue to token holders. And people were gasping. They had no clue that these L1 and L2 blockchains were capable of earning income in a way that, you know, the stocks that they love trading do. And it's extraordinarily attractive. Like, that's a lot of revenue. That's high earning potential. If you look at it on a DEX volume basis, so you can think of the ability to, or you can think of these REV in terms of the activity on top. So like REV as a percentage of total DEX volume, and it, over different time periods, it varies from like 5 to 20 bips. So you have a trading business and you're generating 5 to 20 bips in fees per unit of trading volume. Like, that's really exciting, right? Yeah, it's a ton. So it's a superior monetization method. it's a lot of monetization, and it has the potential to, you know, just have a lot more activity on chain, right? Like, so you have to be looking at Rev. And we think that, you know, we're seeing increasingly institutional investors are. If you think about all the big names in crypto, they are focused on this metric because it's something that they can get behind.
Yeah, I was going to ask actually a little bit more about what you thought about it, but you kind of answered it. Like, just the question of how important is generating a real cash flow? How important is generating revenue? And will that become a basic expectation of crypto projects moving forward? Because in the past, what we've previously seen is that, yes, that's important to investors, but it's not an essential piece. We saw a lot of projects that have been able to blow up with little to no revenue. And it seems like, and you're kind of getting at this, that that will become a basic expectation moving forward in the industry, kind of like it is over in the stock market, right? You know, you see a lot of stocks that come out, and regardless of whether it, you know, their revenue is sky high or mediocre, they all have some form of revenue, right? Most of them have some form of revenue. So would you say that you see the crypto market kind of gravitating towards that same direction?
100%. And to be clear, like, I don't think that a project needs revenue on day one. Like, it's just going to be the same as in TradFi. Like, you can't get by in crypto anymore by making shit up.
Yeah.
Like, just saying that you're going to, no, my money is going to be the money. And our TAM is in the trillions because there are trillions of dollars and we're going to be the dollar. Like, it's okay. Let's say that Bitcoin can do it and it does have a credible way of getting there. It's a very low probability thing. Institutional investors will hear your pitch, think about the probabilities, and ignore you if you tell people that you're going to be money or you're going to be the global reserve, whatever, right? Like, you have to, you know, show me the economics. And, you know, all the big funds are saying this. It's in their investment processes. The retail side of crypto hasn't caught up yet, and it'll be some time. But, you know, 24 and 25 are showing, you know, you see the low float, high FTV, no revenue projects. You see how those tokens are doing. And then you see how the Hyperliquids and Solanas are doing, right? And it's an earnings story.
Yeah, it really is an earnings story. And I'm asking, but kind of projecting, it might also be a regulatory story, because I think that a lot of these projects, you know, during Gary Gensler's SEC, they all, if there were like any sort of hint of revenue or value being passed back, this is why meme coins went so bonkers, because they were like, we're not a security. We're not doing anything, literally anything valuable. So they're like, all right, you guys could keep going doing your thing. But anybody who was like in good faith trying to do valuable stuff, they were like, yeah, we're going to geofence like Americans out of this. And sure, you might be able to buy the token, but we're not going to really have like the fee switch or the buybacks and all that kind of stuff. And so it seems like the regulatory tone has really switched. Do you see that actually being like kind of a factor here? And do you think that it's going to continue to galvanize like the trend in the way that it is?
No, yeah, I think it's a great point that you make. There's a path dependency to this, and people try to keep token and value separate so that they could survive. But now, you know, we've legalized crypto in a sense, and we're getting more and more legal every day. Or we're inching toward regulatory clarity. The political process is unfortunately slow. Investors will reward tokens that have a real value capture capability, and they will ignore tokens that do not. And that's a self-fulfilling cycle, right? The tokens that do not reward token holders or for the risk that they're taking, those will move to the fringes of internet capital markets, and the ones that, you know, play the game right will be rewarded with higher valuations over time.
Yeah. Is there like research that you guys are putting out that is like kind of publicly accessible to our listeners? If we want to go track like this emerging internet capital markets thing, but, you know, we don't have billions of dollars like many of your institutional clients, is there a way for us to kind of keep tabs on what's going on with your guys' research?
Totally, yeah. So we're at blockworksresearch.com. We have a bunch of free articles. We periodically put out free stuff, but X is the base is the best place. A lot of our thinking is very open source. As we are writing our research and talking to teams and funds. We're constantly putting our thoughts out on X, and we're all accessible there. So look for us. We're at Blockworks Res on X in the conversation there. And yeah, you can get a lot of our thoughts there.
Nice. And then Ryan, you know, kind of last question, but was there anything that I didn't ask that you're studying, that you're researching, that you're really excited about that we probably should have spent some time talking about that we didn't get to yet?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on, right? Crypto, geez, there's a ton going on. What do I want to prioritize? I think that there's an interesting thing in crypto capital markets right now where, like, again, like why Bitcoin is successful. It's because the floodgates opened, but they only opened in a very specific way toward Bitcoin. And I think to be successful in liquid markets, you have to think about the structural, like the market structure that funnels capital to different projects. One thing that we like a lot are incumbents. I think historically, incumbents haven't worked in crypto. There's always been a new thing. Capital flows to a new place. But institutions want to put their money in things that are tried and true and that are safe and that have deep liquidity. And by definition, that's the incumbents. So yeah, we're on the lookout for incumbent projects and how they're positioned to, you know, best attract capital in this new regime.
Yeah, I think Brennan and I would call them dino coins. Sometimes we see, like, you know, Zcash, you know, having this big candle. We're like, oh my God, it's a dino coin. It's back. But yeah, I totally think that. Yeah, full disclosure, you know, I've got a lot of exposure to, like, Maker, and, like, that's one that I think, you know, now that it's Sky and they're doing, like, all sorts of cool stuff, I think that's going to be a really big winner just in terms of, like, you know, making $100 million a year and trying to plow that back into token holders is pretty crazy and pretty cool. So yeah, man, we're really excited about all, you know, kind of, you know, following along with your research. We hope we could have you back on again at some point, because I know there's a lot to cover. And yeah, people could, you know, follow you, Blockworks Res. Do you have an X handle yourself that you'd like to shout out for us in the show notes?
Yeah, I am _ Ryan R. Connor on X.
Beautiful. All right, Ryan. Well, we really appreciate your time today. Let us know how permissionless goes. Maybe you come back on, give us the 101 on everything that we missed out on if listeners didn't attend. But until next time, we'll see you soon.
Thanks a bunch, guys. Appreciate it.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/RedCircle, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/RedCircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/RedCircle.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.